talked a lot about the problems that you can see and the problems that you can't see. And the problems that you cannot see when you get angry, and which you wouldn't be aware of unless you went to a Buddhism class, is that it destroys tremendous amounts of good karma. Whatever good karma you have in your mind, in your mind stream, anger is very effective at destroying it. And it gave a ratio of about 1 to a zillion, meaning one instance of anger at a bodhisattva, for example, destroys something like millions of years of good karma. So, and we don't know who's a bodhisattva around us. Could be anybody. Bodhisattvas don't necessarily look like bodhisattvas. And as we're going to learn later, it's considered bodhisattva etiquette not to look like a bodhisattva. So you never know. So you have to be careful. Then we got into the benefits of it, which are if you don't get angry, all the good karma you have, you save. And then that good karma, since it actually creates your world and creates your reality starts to change. In a very minor level, food starts to taste better. The city starts to look cleaner. The subway comes on time. Your friends are good to you. You have good classes. When you meditate, everything seems to go well. And these are all results of good karma. So that's the opposite. Then he got into the causes of anger, and it was being upset. And he mentioned that being upset was like food that anger lived on. And if anger gets its food, it'll survive and get stronger and stronger and turn around and smash you in this life and in your future lives. And then he says if anger doesn't get its food to eat, then it just withers away and dies. And the food is getting upset about things happening that you don't like and about not getting the things that you do want. And they can be stopped by either circumstances or other people. It doesn't matter. But you just have to not get upset at them. And then he went into how do you not get upset. And it was very simple. And he had that very short verse, very famous verse. The way to prevent getting upset, which means anger will never come, is to reflect on the fact that if you can do something about something you don't like if there's somebody at work you don't like and if you can get them fired, do it. And not really. And if there's nothing you can do, then just shut up and bear, grin and bear it, you know, and don't get upset because there's no point to it. And he also made the point that getting upset doesn't achieve anything. Getting upset by itself never gets you what you want. You know, it's natural to get upset when you're not getting what you want, but if you think about it, getting upset doesn't have any function in getting you what you want. Normally it throws you off balance and you're less able to function and then you actually don't get what you want as well as if you didn't get upset. It's better to calculate your life when you're not upset than when you are upset. Like when I'm mad at somebody, I made a rule for myself that I don't talk to them until 2 days later or something. And then usually I forgot about it by then, you know. So if he says if you can do something about it, do it. If you can't do something about it, forget it. And then you won't get upset, anger won't have anything to eat, you won't collect bad karma, you won't destroy your good karma, and your world will start to change and get more pleasant. There'll actually be fewer things to get upset at, then you'll get upset at less, and it's an upward cycle. Bill Gates talks about it. And then there are downward cycles, so we don't want to get into a downward cycle. Okay. At this point, Master Shantideva goes into some very, very sophisticated. I think tonight is the most important class for patients. He goes into some very sophisticated arguments about why you should not get angry. And we're going to start on those. Hector's going to read the first one, which is rather short. And then we get to what I consider the heart of the whole chapter. You know, when I was preparing the readings, I almost skipped this part because it seemed very technical. And then when I thought about it, this is the most important part for us. So you'll get it. But first there's one verse which is not too bad. And Hector's going to read that one. You ready? Okay. So close your eyes. This is contemplation time.
We should then be angry at unwitting physical objects. Contemplation 7. You fail to feel anger for bile and such, these major sources of pain. Why then are you angry at those with minds? They're all impelled by influences. Illness, for example, is something which occurs despite the fact we never wished it to. Just so, the arrival of violent mental affliction is something we never wanted. Anger wells up in people despite themselves. No one says, "I think I'll get angry now." Anger comes, then all the same. And it starts without anyone saying, "I think I'll start it now."
Okay, this is a little tricky, this one. For this, you have to go to Tibetan medicine. Tibetan medicine says, I had a chance to translate for the Dalai Lama's doctor about 20 years ago in New York. I think at Nancy Karen's house. And Tibetan medical theory, which is based on the tantras, medical tantras, says that there are three basic elements in your body. They're called Chiba, Baken, and Lung, which means bile, phlegm, and wind. And when those three energies, they're like an energy of warmth, an energy of liquid, and an energy of movement. And when those three energies are in your body, and when they're in good balance, your body is healthy. And when they're out of balance, your body gets sick. Like if you have too much wind element, you start to get nervous. Like when you're in meditation and you get what they call lung. And if you get too much of the phlegm element, you get like pneumonia. If you have too much of the bile element, you might have diseases of the liver or the kidney. But what happens is there's some imbalance inside of your body occurs. And then you get sick. And in fact, the Dalai Lama's doctor was making the point that a balance of those three is a mistake. And it's not normal. And that the normal condition of the body is sickness. You know, and to be healthy is an accident. And that it's not the normal condition of a human body. So, Master Shantideva says, "I think, according to your thinking, the way you guys are thinking, you should get mad at your liver, or you should get mad at your lungs, or you should get mad at your large intestines." You know, the equivalent in our medicine, right? In their system, it would be, "Get mad at your wind, get mad at your bile." You know, why? Then the guy says, there's this fall guy who's always standing there next to Master Shantideva. He says, "Why?" You know, and Master Shantideva says, "They made you sick." You know, and that's something that's going to make you suffer your whole life. Your body will make you suffer your whole life. If it hasn't started yet in a major way, just live a little longer. Okay? It'll come. So he says, "You should get mad at your body. You know, you should be mad at your body." And the other guy says, "I don't see why, because my body doesn't hurt me intentionally." Okay? Like the elements of my body may get messed up and my body may get sick. But it's not like the elements had a meeting and planned it, you know, and they said, "Okay, Mr. Bile, you get heavy, okay? Mr. Wind, you slow down. You know, Mr. Phlegm, you speed up. You know, and we'll make this guy sick, you know." He says, it's not like that. Your body just automatically gets sick. It's not like your body is intentionally plotting to make you sick. And people aren't like that. People are acting intentionally. People are hurting me intentionally. With premeditation, they're hurting me. And then Master Shantideva says, "Well, then you're being illogical, because nobody plans to get mad. You know, nobody says, 'Oh, I'll go to work today and get mad.' Anger itself doesn't think, 'Oh, I think I'll have a good anger today.' You know, it's not like that. People get angry out of control. Their mental afflictions control them. They get upset to a certain level, and then they must get angry. And it's not their fault. It's not premeditated. It's not planned. It just comes up in people's hearts. Usually anger is just like a big wave, and it hits you. And when it comes, you can't do anything. And you know that. You know, you try to feel okay, and you try to feel not upset. And then you see that guy again at work, and it comes again in you, you know. And it's not like you're planning it. You're out of control. You are under, somebody else is in control. Your mental afflictions are in control. Your being upset is in control. And you don't have a choice at that moment. It's too late. You couldn't do anything about it if you wanted. It's like a big wave of anger comes up in you. So Master Shantideva says, if you're going to get angry at another person for being angry at you or for doing something bad to you, then you should get angry at your body. And the other guy says, "Well, but they don't do it intentionally." And he says, "Well, who do you think does do it intentionally? You know, nobody goes to work and says, 'I'm going to have a lot of nice mental afflictions today,' because they hurt and they're unpleasant. So Master Shantideva says, your argument's no good. You should just stop being angry. Because those people that you're angry at are out of control. And they don't, being angry is no fun. Being angry makes you unhappy. Being angry ruins your health. And so it's not logical that you should be angry at people. Because they're not getting angry on purpose. It's not like they want to get angry. It's not like somebody wants to be miserable their whole day. You meet people who seem to work very hard at it. But but basically nobody likes to be unhappy. They are under the control of another thing, which is their mental afflictions. They cannot control themselves. Okay. Then Master Shantideva gets into the point of, well, who is in control? And what is going on when something happens that you don't like? We're not going to read these verses, okay? We're going to skip these verses. Because they're very, very technical. There's about 5 or 6 verses. It's in your reading and you can read it. But it's very difficult. So we're just going to jump straight into it from the point of view of explanation. Because the verses are very technical. Master Shantideva at this point, and I repeat, if you don't listen to anything else in this course, I think this next 20 minutes or so is the most important thing in this course. In my idea, it's the most important thing in this course. Master Shantideva says, the clue or the key to stopping your anger is to understand where did the things that you get angry at come from? Where did your boss come from? You know, where did that guy at work that you don't like come from? Where did that traffic jam come from? Where did that humidity and the heat come from? You know, where did your credit card bills come from? You know, I mean, both animate and inanimate objects that piss you off, where did they come from? Who made them? Why are they here? You know, what's the answer of where these things really came from? And then you can understand anger. And then you can decide what to do about anger. Okay? So he puts up this big banner. You know, he says, everybody who has an idea, you come. And we'll decide where all these things came from that we don't like. You know, in my life, my own mind, my own thoughts, other people who bother me, situations that bother me, things in the city that bother me, my parents that bother me, my relatives, friends, children, everybody around, who made them? And then you get a clue into whether you should be angry or not. You know, decide who made them. Where did they come from? And this is a question that's not asked in America much. You know, like a kid, I remember a kid, but there'll be somebody driving, two people be driving. It happened to a friend of mine recently. And they hit another car. One person dies. The other person just gets up and walks out. Okay? And then the kid comes, the kid hears about it and goes to mom and says, why did he die, and why did he didn't get hurt at all? And mom says, don't ask stupid questions, you know. He was sitting on the right side, he was sitting on the left side, the car hit on the right side, he went through the windshield. He wasn't wearing a seatbelt, the other guy was wearing a seatbelt. That's why. And the kid goes, no, mom, but I want to know why one guy was wearing a seatbelt and the other guy wasn't wearing a seatbelt. He says, well, it's all right. He put his on and he didn't put his on. Yeah, but why did he put his on and he didn't put his on? Well, that guy didn't remember to put his on and that guy did remember to put his on. Yeah, but why did he remember to put it on? The other guy didn't remember to put it on. And then at some point, you got used to it and your parents said, stop asking. You know, there's no reason after that. But that's not scientific. You know, according to everything of logic, according to everything about reasoning and science, and modern life, you know, there should be a reason for everything. There has to be a reason for everything. And there is a reason why that guy didn't do a seatbelt. And there is a reason why the other guy did do a seatbelt. Where does it come from? You know, where does this world come from? And where do the people in it come from? And you know, at a certain point you stop asking, you know. Like maybe when you were a kid you thought it was the stork. You know, and then later on you thought it was God. And then later on you thought it was Big Bang, because that's what the New York Times says, you know. And you're a reasonable person. And the New York Times is reasonable. And anything the New York Times says is reasonable. You know, and I'm a modern, reasonable person. And everything came from this Big Bang because they got this telescope and it saw this dust out there, you know. And of course they change their opinion every couple of years, but that's okay. And, you know, that's the way it happened. And where did it all come from? Where did you come from? And specifically, those things that make you angry, the things that irritate you, whether it's a traffic jam or somebody at work or your boss or whatever, Where did he come from? Who made him? This is crucial, because you can get rid of him if you figure out where he came from. Where did they come from? Santideva asked this question. He makes this, let's have a public discussion. You guys come and tell me. So two people come. One are called the Nyayakas, and one are called the Samkhyas. Okay, these are two Hindu schools. They would be the Baptists and the Catholics nowadays. Seriously, okay? It would be whoever. Okay, it would be like two religions that are popular right now. Okay, whatever. Let's say Big Bang Theory and God Theory. Okay, it's very similar. Okay, and let's go through the Samkhya system. Okay, Samkhyas, let's see what they said caused the world. Say Tsol. Tsol. Tsol means, you guys know the word in Lamso Namsum. It means principle, main. And in this religion, it meant, I like to call it the primal one. You know, like the one. The source of all things. Okay? What is Tsol like? You know, what is old Mr. Tsol like? Well, Tsol made the world. Okay? According to this religion called the Samkhya in ancient India, Tsol made the world. Tsol does things. Tsol makes things called Namgyur. Say Namgyur. Namgyur. Namgyur means the expressions of Tsol. So everything in the world is an expression of Tsol. Like the Quaker church is Tsol expressing himself. You know, this is another expression of Tsol. Tsol is this big, huge, invisible energy called, we would call it God maybe, right? I mean, in our culture, this is Tsol. Tsol is this huge in energy, and then every once in a while, Tsol shows things, you know, like here's a church, here's New York City, here's America, here's Mars, you know, and these are all expressions of Tsol. And that's what they believe. So Tsol didn't have any beginning. Nobody made Tsol. Tsol made everything. Sound familiar? Okay. Okay, gotta get used to it, right? Tsol has been here forever. Tsol made everything, but nobody made Tsol. Okay? Tsol has just always been here. And everything you see is an expression of Tsol. It's a Namgyur of Tsol. Tsol is expressing himself. Okay? And that's what the Samkhyas believe. They believe Samkhya means numerous, and they divide the world into a specific number of expressions, and like 20-something expressions, and then Tsol is up there hanging out and showing expressions, okay? And this is where the world came from. So the guy you don't like, your boss, the guy who comes in and screams at you in the morning and makes you angry, is an expression of Tsol. Tsol was not busy today, so he made your boss, you know, and he's expressing himself, you know, and you're seeing a little piece of Tsol in life called your boss, and that's Tsol. And behind him is Tsol working, okay? It's very close to the Western idea of God, okay? It's very, very close to that idea, okay? Now, what do the Nyaya schools say? Nyayakas means like logicians, logicalists. I call them logicalists because they're wrong, so it sounds a little silly, right? Logicalists. They say, Doc. In Sanskrit, the word is Atman. Okay, Atman. Doc. And Doc just means self-existent being. Capital S, capital E. He's been here forever. Sound familiar? No one made him. He makes everything. But in a different sense is that he's this supreme thing that experiences all things. Okay, like he is an isness. He is a oneness. And then he has these feelers out through the whole universe, and he's just feeling things, and he's just experiencing things. And this is Dog. This is Self. This is the Self. And he's like the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, okay? And he's just this big guy, and he's experiencing all the objects of the world. But he's unchanging. Nothing made him. He's been there forever. And he is also responsible for all the things you don't like in your life. Okay? These are again, creations of the Dog, the Atman, the Self. Okay? And these are the two big ideas that Master Shantideva wants to discuss. Let's look at what these people think, and let's decide what we're going to do about it. There's another word for this which you should know, especially Tibetan track people. Say shirik ki kebu. Shirik ki kebu. If you ever study Drupta, which is what do we call it? Comparative philosophy, the Buddhist way, you know, in where they present the beliefs of all the different schools of philosophy, Buddhist and non-Buddhist, there'll be a big section on shirik kebu. So I think it's good for the Tibetan Chag people to learn that word. What does it mean? It's not very clear. Okay, shirik means mental. It combines two words for knowledge, and kebu means being. And in the descriptions of it, you would say like it's the original mental being. I like to call it the original mental being. It's like some kind of primeval thinking thing. Okay? And this is a synonym for Doc. Okay? This is another name for Mr. Doc. Okay? Mr. Atman. By the way, I think in the early days of Buddhism in the West, when the Buddhists said there's no self, and they used this word Anatman, Doc, the negative of it, I think Western philosophers got confused and thought that the main point of Buddhism was to refute this particular God, you know, and it's not. When we say that grasping to a self, a Doc, or an Atman, is causing all your trouble, it doesn't only mean some non-existent guy. It refers more specifically to a non-existent nature of any object, to where it could grow on its own, independent of your perceptions. Okay, so that's just a point. You know, I think if you read early books on Buddhism, they thought this was the dock, the main dock that we are refuting when we talk about emptiness, and it's not. Okay, it just happens to be another non-existent dock. Okay, it's not that Buddhism spent all its time attacking these poor Nyayakas, okay? So those are the two big daddies that supposedly created the world. Okay, and Master Shantideva says, let's look at these guys. Let's see if they created the people that you're angry at. You know, and he didn't know anything. I mean, Christianity was still 1,500 years away. Was it? No, 500 years away. I mean, when the Buddha taught this, it was still 500 years away. So he wasn't attacking like any of our beliefs, but it happens to be our belief. Okay, I would say you're one of three people in this room. You either subconsciously believe that the world came from a God, or you've rejected that and you kind of think it came from a Big Bang, but you're not sure. Or you could care less and you don't think about it much. Okay, I mean, I'd say one of three possibilities. Master Shantideva says, if you're going to get rid of your anger, you have to resolve this question. You have to decide where these people came from. Who created the things that make you angry? Because this is a key to overcome anger. You can't overcome anger. You will never overcome anger unless you understand who made the things that make you angry. So he goes through each of these possibilities one by one. And we will too. All right. So the first question he asks, and you'll see it in the reading, all right? He says, who made these two guys? I mean, that's question number one. And by the way, this is so simple and so obvious that it goes over your head, you know. You know? I mean, you didn't even ask this question in church when you were a kid. Okay? Mom, you know, if God made the world and God made everything and God's always been here, but who made God? You know, and you say, don't worry about it, you know, and so it's okay. It's impolite to ask that question. It's disrespectful to ask that question. It's combative to ask that question. You know, grandma would be very upset if she heard you say things like that. You know, don't say things like that. You know, just buy it. Just do it. You know, and I'm not being disrespectful to Christianity or Judaism. I'm not. Okay, it's not the point. The point is, can you reach liberation? Can you free yourself if you have those superstitions still in your mind? You have to talk about it. You have to decide, where did these things come from? And I'm not being disrespectful. And Christianity and Judaism, incredible benefit for millions and millions of people over thousands of years. And you'd have to be very, very stupid to say that that's not true. or to focus on the little problems they've had, like the Inquisition or something. And no, I'm serious. You know, I'm very serious. The benefits of those systems far, in my opinion, is almost infinite compared to small problems that they've had. The question for us, though, is if you really want to reach nirvana and Buddhahood, can you accept these two things? You know, can you accept these two beings? And Master Shantideva says, no. And you better know why. You know, you have to use your mind. And it's not being disrespectful. It's not being heretical. It's not attacking anybody. It's that if you still have a wrong idea that is so serious, you may not be able to achieve your goals. Okay? So what's wrong with this? That's the first objection that Master Shantideva has. And in fact, when I have tried to explain God to Tibetans, this is almost always the first reaction I get. You know, they say, what's God like? And I say, by the way, it's on your homework, okay? Sowol made everything. But he never began. And he's always been there. Okay? No one created him. He creates everything else. He's always been there. And he makes these things called expressions of soul. And they are the world. And the guy that pisses you off at work is another expression of soul. That's soul. What is Dak? What is Atman? Oh, Atman is different. Atman is this big guy. He also existed forever. No one created him. And he just has these tentacles out, antennas, and he's experiencing the entire universe. You know, he is an experiencing being who never changes, who has existed forever. No one ever created him. And he's also creating the things in the world. And these are what's coming to you. So Master Shantideva, in his first opening salvo, you know, it's like, yeah, but who made them? You know, I've got to have a cause. Things have to have a cause. Who made them? And then they say, we don't know. They couldn't make themselves, okay? Why? Because if you're not there to think, I'd like to make myself today, you can't make yourself. And it's just so obvious that it goes over your head. And you thought of it probably in third grade or something. And then by fourth grade, your parents had talked you out of it. You were right. Okay? It doesn't make sense. Okay? It doesn't make sense that there's this big guy who is always there, who makes everything else, but no one made him. It just doesn't make sense. Because somebody had to make him. Somebody had to make him. Or else he's been there forever without a cause. And we'll get into that. There's two choices. Either somebody made him or he's been there forever without a cause. Okay? So let's say somebody made him. Who made him? It would have had to be who? Soul. But he ain't there yet. He wasn't there yet. Okay? Soul makes everything. That's part of this religion. Soul makes everything. Is God a thing? Is soul a thing? Yes, soul is a thing. So who made soul? Soul made soul. So soul, before he existed, thought to himself, I think I'll make soul today. It's just crazy. It just doesn't make any sense at all. That's Shantideva's first, Master Shantideva, that's his first argument. Very simple. Okay? It's impossible for soul to have thought to make himself today before soul existed, and according to you, soul made everything. We're going to get into it. She asked me, but even in Buddhism you say we are beginningless, so what's the difference? So we're going to get into that. Maybe right now. Okay? So on one hand, we got that right, right? Everyone's like, okay, maybe it's that old God thing from church. If soul had a cause, something had to made soul. But soul is the only thing that makes anything, so soul would have had to made soul before soul existed. And soul would have had to think to himself, I think I'll make myself today, before he existed today. So it's crazy. It doesn't make sense. The guy who pisses you off at work did not come from soul, okay? What are the other possibilities? I think you have to clarify the meaning of these three words before we can talk more about soul, okay? Sight, eternal, roughly, what does it mean to you, eternal? Huh? Dr. Chilton? Eternal. Yeah, like this is an eternal problem. Spring's eternal, love springs eternal. Eternal. I think that's what it means to me, okay? Eternal to me means no beginning and no end, okay? Eternal God, everlasting, you know, like that. I'm not making fun. I don't want to make fun. But this is what they say. Those are the words. That's the wording of the prayer. Okay, eternal. Yeah, there's a little flavor of that, that there could be a beginning but no end. But I think the primary meaning of eternal, like this is the eternal question of life, means it's always been a question and it's always going to be a question. So I think we have to, I want to clarify terms, you know, that's what we do before a debate, you know. Are we talking the same language? Eternal means no beginning, no end, okay? What about permanent and impermanent? Permanent resident status, green card. What's it mean? Yeah, it will always be. It won't end or break. You know, this is, you know, permanent plastic holding this thing, and we guarantee it'll never break. That's usually a bad sign, you know. But the claim permanent means it'll never break or something like that. It'll never stop. I think things can have a beginning and be permanent, right? I mean, you can say this is a permanent fixture. But it doesn't mean it's eternal. It doesn't mean this fixture's been here forever. It just means we're going to put this fixture here and we intend that it lasts a long time. Yeah. Yeah, sort of concrete. Should be concrete, but not necessarily. But we'll talk about it. So permanent means like lasts forever, doesn't break. Okay. And then changing means, you know, it's just obvious. Sometimes big, sometimes small, sometimes hot, sometimes cold. Fluctuating. Like that. I like to say like that. Okay? Fluctuating, always changing. We have to understand these three words first. Okay? Yeah. Right. Well, I think it could come back to similar 2 days later or something, right? Like the weather changes, but 2 days can be pretty similar. Something like that. But mostly almost never the same. Okay? So on your homework, I've asked you to do a little bit of a thinking, okay? We call mushi musum. Mushi musum is an exercise into Buddhist logic where you say, does any object include these two qualities or not? So I'll ask you, okay? Is there anything which is changing but eternal? Something which is eternal, has always been and always will be, but goes through constant fluctuations. The mind, the human mind, according to Buddhism, okay? And you don't have to buy it now. You can go to Boston this weekend and you'll believe it by the end of the weekend. But the mind, according to Buddhism, the mind had no beginning and has no end. Okay, even after you become a Buddha, you still have a mind. Okay? And even a Buddha's mind is constantly fluctuating. Why? What's one reason why? Ha. How about sky? Space. Yeah, because it's perceiving things. Like when you see an apple, your mind changes according to Buddhism. It gets a little apple focus to it, apple aspect to the mind. There's an image being imprinted on your mind of this roundish red thing. Okay? And when you feel good, the mind changes a little bit. When you feel bad, the mind moves a little bit, and like that. The mind is in a constant, the mind is like a moving mirror. And each object it encounters, it's changing. You cannot perceive something without changing. If you have a good friend, you change good. If you have a bad friend, you change bad. But every single object that you focus on, everything you see, changes your mind and changes your life forever. And the mind is in constant flux. As the mind focuses on different objects, the mind is changing. And that's the nature of the mind. But it is eternal, okay, according to Buddhism. Didn't have any beginning, didn't have any end. But while it's being eternal, it's in a constant chain, constant state of flux. Okay? Got it? All right. By the way, I believe these words have been mistranslated in Buddhism for a long time. And so I'm asking you to question how you think about them. All right? How about eternal but not changing? About the only example is empty space, okay? Empty space. What does empty space mean? There's a place. Watch this. Okay. There's a place where I put that file, okay? There's space there. There's empty space there, okay? Right now, the file is filling it up. It is occupying the space, okay? Now, watch this. You know? Is the space still there? Yeah, I mean, it didn't change. Its nature did not change. Space is defined in Buddhism as the absence of any concrete object. If it wasn't there, I couldn't have got the file into it. You know, there is empty space there. And it's being occupied right now. And then I take it out, and it's still there. If this world were destroyed, when the sun supernovas, as Buddhism says it will, and this world melts, which Buddhism says it will, and it'll evaporate, it'll vaporize. This planet will vaporize. A certain supernova of this sun will occur in so many million years, according to Abhidharma, third chapter, and then this world won't be here anymore. Will that empty space still be there? Yeah, it's not affected by the world. It's always there. It always has been there. It always will be there. Whether or not it's occupied, whether or not we're around, it'll always be there. That's an example of what? Something which is eternal but not changing. Okay? Permanent but changing. Permanent but changing. What? She said mind again, and that's the perfect answer. Okay? It is permanent. It is going to be around. Okay? It always will be around. It's not going to like break or disappear or something like that. Okay? Impermanent and changing. Just about everything. Okay? I put in the answer jobs and worldly relationships. Okay? I mean, impermanent and changing. Constant flux. Never the same. You go to work one day, you know, you think your job's okay, they sold the company, they said, please don't come tomorrow. After 15 years, no, please don't come tomorrow, you know. And relationships, you know, you thought you met the perfect person, within a week they're the perfect enemy, and 3 weeks later you could care less, you know. I mean, this is constant flux, okay, impermanent and changing, okay. Then there's a trick question, which maybe I won't give you, all right. Because then it won't be a trick anymore. Now let's do that one. Dak means like, today, it means like some big guy that made the world that's always been here. Okay? Say, Dak, the loss of hair has a cause. But the absence of the hair doesn't have a cause. That's a difference. Yeah. Right. So it's just a simple absence of something. Oh, it's an interesting idea. It wasn't created. Let's put it that way. It wasn't created. It didn't go through a process of growing, starting small, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Absences are absolute. That's the point. Like the absence of an elephant in this room is absolute. It doesn't get more or less absent. It's just either totally absent or totally present. And that's the point. Okay, there's not a condition of an elephant being half absent here or half present here or something like that. Either it's here or it's not here. If the elephant is absent from this room, it's total absence and it doesn't change. It doesn't waver. It's always just simple, total absence. And it doesn't get more absentee or less absentee. It's just absent. And that's the point. That's the point. And it's not created. It doesn't go through a process of growing from a seed, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, fluctuating like that, going through a death process, going through an aging process. It doesn't happen. It's either completely absent or present. There's no fluctuation. And that's true of emptiness also. Can I destroy... Does this paper have emptiness? Yeah. Does this paper have its own emptiness? Does this paper have its lack of self-existence? Absolutely, every object in the universe has its own lack of self-existence. Okay? Is that eternal? No. That's a very important point. When I destroy this paper, you know, or I burn this paper, its emptiness goes out of existence. Was it destroyed? No. Did it go through a process of getting less, less, less empty, less empty, less empty, and then suddenly gone? No. And that's a very subtle thing, and you have to learn it. And it's not the subject of this class. But it's very important. It's very important. It does have its emptiness, and its emptiness is takpa, meaning unchanging. Does it mean permanent? Not at all. When I destroy the paper, the emptiness goes out of existence. Is the emptiness destroyed? No. Did the emptiness start? No. Was the emptiness there the moment the paper existed? Yes. Was it there the moment before the paper existed? No. Did it grow? No. Did it start small, get bigger, 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 and become more empty? No. It's purely empty in the first moment of its existence. It's purely empty in the final moments of its existence. And on both sides, if you go an inch more, it just wasn't there. But we don't say it went through a process of change. And that's difficult. You have to study that. And many people misunderstand it, and that's why that word is translated wrong since forever. Okay? Eternally. All right. So I'm going to go on, but I have a feeling, I just want to make sure you get the profoundness of what just happened here. I was not just knocking Judeo-Christian beliefs. You have them deep in your guts. They come from your childhood. Those things are difficult to remove. But there is no such thing. You know, when you go to find out who to blame for your problems, you know, when you go to find out who to blame for that guy at work, or the girl that dumped you, or all that stuff, it ain't God, okay? Because that cannot exist. For those three reasons, that object cannot exist. By the way, we didn't cover one other possibility. Could God have been created from nothing? You know, could maybe did He just come from nothing? It doesn't make sense. It's just, that's just not even, I mean, no serious scientist and no serious Buddhist would even entertain it. It's on your homework. You know, it says, could He come from nothing? And you just say, no. Okay? It's just not a possibility. Yeah. Maybe a serious religious person would think that. Could entertain it, yeah. We would say, then is the God which you say exists changing or unchanging? If that God is changing, it must have had a cause. Because there's something which is causing the fluctuation in that God. If that God is a knowing being, if that God is aware of you and watching you, if that God did anything like working six whole days to create the world, He must have been changing and moving. And in that case, He must have had a cause. Because it's illogical. There's no such thing as anything which can affect anything which was not affected itself. And you can study the reading on that point. I'll say it again. There's no such thing as a thing which affects anything which is not affected by other things. Impossible. Impossible. Because by affecting, He's affected. And it's just, it's so simple, sometimes it goes over your head. Those three arguments are airtight. The only thing that rebels in your heart is your illogical upbringing. And you have to, it's time to stop that. And you have to find the real cause of where those things came from. Okay? And your whole culture is fighting you. You know, and it's very difficult. It's like the kid with his finger in the dam, you know. And there's a whole dam, and you're like, all you have is this little tiny understanding about all these things, you know. But it doesn't make sense. Yeah. To me, Big Bang is the same as Doc, right? Or I'm sorry, it's all. I mean, came from nothing. Came from, how could anything come from nothing? It's just illogical. It's just perfectly illogical. You know, you base your whole Western rational life on the belief that things have causes. Since the Middle Ages, man has been proud to say, we figured out that things have causes. Oh, but there's only one thing, everything. You know, it's crazy. It's really crazy. And the only reason your heart is objecting right now is brainwashing. You know, it's just illogical, crazy brainwashing that you've had. You know, and you'll still get it. You have to go for the real reason. Okay. Yeah. Not if you posit that that being created everything. I'm sorry, it's just so obvious that you miss it. Because he won't hear yet. Yeah. Well, somebody asked me that. They said, what do you do if somebody comes up and says, my God is illogical. My God doesn't make sense. My God is beyond all understanding. You know, my God is uncaused and causes everything. My God doesn't ever move and makes everything move. In debate, in a Buddhist monastery, when someone reaches that point in the debate, You say, Nyun ding wa dang, zhe bu mei. You know, I can't debate with a crazy man. So, you know, and you just go. You know. You know. No, you just go. You just go. You say, if you choose to suspend the laws which you base your whole world on to prove something that you feel like proving today, well, God bless you could do that with anything. So we can't debate. We have to stop. And actually, in Buddhist monastery, at that point, you just walk off. You just say, okay, you know, you want to be illogical for the next hour? I'll be back later. You know, yeah. Well, we draw a difference, a very important distinction between omniscience and omnipotence. Okay? The Buddha is omniscient. In fact, that's the word, what the word Buddha means. But in no way omnipotent. What is the proof of that? We are suffering. We are suffering. Either he's sadistic or he's not omnipotent. Because if we're suffering, he should have fixed it by now. You know, or else he's like some kind of sadist, you know, which we reject. That's, to me, that's the Nyun Ding Wan Dang, you know. You're basically choosing to suspend your own beliefs at the most crucial moment of your beliefs. One more and then we got to get going. Now, I could stay all night, but I don't think you want to. You got these buses and stuff. The Zhou and the Dak, you don't have to personalize them. Okay? They could be impersonal also. She's saying, why couldn't the Big Bang happen if it just happened from a previous universe that was expanding more or shrinking less? No problem with that in Buddhism. No problem at all. You're just saying things were caused by other causes. That's exactly what we say. That's exactly what we're trying to say. When I say Big Bang doesn't mean anything or Big Bang is false, is when Big Bang says there's no cause. That before that there was nothing, and then suddenly there was something. It's crazy. You know, I mean, if the New York Times got to Tibet and it was translated, people would just, ha ha ha, you know, Big Bang. You know, something came from nothing, you know. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And the only reason you entertain it is that all these eminent scientists say it, you know. There's no logic for it. It's not logical. It's silly. It's as silly as the soul and the dark, okay. Just silly, yeah. Oh, and I don't fight with those scientists. We're not fighting with those scientists at all. If they say Big Bang had a cause, God bless Big Bang. Okay, yeah. Yeah. It should. Okay, it will. Okay, we got to go on. Okay. Come afterwards. We'll talk. All right. Next reading, Mr. Hector. Okay. So basically, we finished off God, okay? Sorry. You cannot blame the unpleasant things in your life on this thing, because this thing cannot exist, period. Okay? It's not that we don't like Christianity, we don't like Judaism, we don't like this, we don't like... It's not a personal thing. This is a description of a ribongira. What's a ribongira? The horn on the head of a rabbit. And my question to you is, it's 12 inches or 16 inches? It doesn't exist. Okay? And you can talk about all day what it's like. It doesn't matter. That thing that they describe, the Samkhyas and the Nyayakas and our Western culture, is just flatly impossible. It's just flatly impossible. Get used to the idea. It's very important to clean that and purge that from your heart. Again, does it mean there are not compassionate, omniscient, holy beings all around us all the time? Not at all. They are around us all the time. They are constantly watching after us. They have every intention of helping us. They help us in extraordinary, unexpected, secret ways all day long. So don't feel, you know, that part of the guy exists, okay? All right. Number 9. Go ahead. Close your eyes.
People do so much harm to themselves that it is no surprise if they hurt us. Contemplation number 9. There are those who, having lost their senses, hurt themselves by themselves with thorns and such. To get a woman or the like, they become obsessed, and then do things like refusing to eat food. Some go and hang themselves, leap from cliffs, and swallow poison or other harmful things. Others go and hurt themselves by living in a way against the virtuous life. If people driven to it because of their mental afflictions even kill their own dear selves, then what surprise could it ever be to see that they also act in ways that harm the bodies of other people? Thus do people live, committing acts like suicide, driven by their own bad thoughts. If by some chance you cannot feel some pity for them, at least withhold your anger.
Okay. Here Shantideva is giving you some... By the way, he's a very great logician, a great debater. It just doesn't sound like it because it's so sweet. Okay, and he's saying, look, it doesn't make sense to get mad. Why? It doesn't get... Somebody comes up and says, I should get mad, I can get mad, because you cannot deny that this person has hurt me. Joe Blow has hurt me. I can prove it. You know, there's this guy at work, he went to the boss, he made up a lie, he set me up. I didn't get my bonus. You know, he hurt me. You can't say, Mr. Shantideva, that he didn't hurt me. He hurt me. Everybody can see he hurt me. And then Master Shantideva says, look, go out in the world. First of all, you can see people who hurt themselves in the name of religion. And this was in places like India where it was considered you could get to nirvana if you walked on hot coals or if you cut yourself a certain way or you jumped off a cliff a certain way. And there were schools that said you could reach nirvana that way. Okay. Then he says, people also around, you can see people everywhere to get things they want. And he mentions money and women. Okay? They do all sorts of harm to themselves, you know. They refuse to eat, they spend all their money, they waste their money, they don't sleep at night, they worry about it, they get all sorts of treatments on themselves. You know, they are constantly torturing themselves for things that they can never get. And this is the nature of people. They are hurting themselves all day long. Then he mentions people who just get depressed and go out and hang themselves or shoot themselves or jump off cliffs. And he says, just the normal human being in New York City is doing so much harm to themselves. What do you expect them to do to you? You know, what, are you so surprised? What are you so surprised about? You know, human beings in our world don't know how to take care of themselves. They don't even know how to stop hurting themselves. And then he mentions doing non-virtue, you know, which is the ultimate hurt. People all over the world are stealing, lying, doing adultery, killing people, hurting people to get what they want. And it's exactly having the opposite effect. But because of their own stupidity and their own ignorance, they are like wild animals, like doing some crazy thing and cutting themselves by accident. So what do you expect from these people? You know, and we have to introduce the idea of Chiba. Say Chiba. Chiba. Chiba is a word, you can find it in the third chapter of the Abhidhamma, where they discuss the stages of man. You know, first you are, there's I think 9 stages in the womb. Nur Nur Por, Mer Mer Por, Lele Por. You know, these are like jelly, blob, sticky, cylinder, bumpy, and these are all the stages of a fetus in the womb. And then they go through all the stages of a childhood. They go through 3 to 6, 6 to 9, you know, and each one has a different name. And this is all the development of a person throughout their whole life, and it has different names in Tibetan. Chiba refers to like 3 to 6. Chiba refers to infant or a kid or a child. Okay? Chiba means child. And Shantideva says, Master Shantideva says, look, frankly, the world is filled with a bunch of violent children. Violent Chibas. Okay? They're acting crazy. They don't even know how to take care of themselves. The mass of humanity is murdering each other, stealing from each other, and most of all, the mass of humanity is hurting themselves. You know, the mass of humanity doesn't even know how to take care of themselves. They're killing themselves, they're hurting themselves, they're doing crazy things to get the things they want, and the whole thing is deluded. You know, all mankind is like a big gang of violent kids who just don't know what to do, and they don't have any clue. And they are doing everything possible, everything that mankind is engaged in has one result, to cause themselves suffering. All these efforts they make to make money, and to get women, and to get houses, and to get cars, and to get famous, and all these things. Every action they do, 90% of the actions they do, are actually bad karma. And they're actually destroying their own happiness very effectively, like crazy little children. Okay? So Shantideva throughout this chapter is going to be referring to Chiba. Okay? But in Buddhist philosophy, it has another meaning. It means the opposite of a pakpa. What's a pakpa? Someone who has seen emptiness directly. And anyone who has not qualifies as a violent kid. All right? Very interesting. The world is full of two kinds of people. If you've seen emptiness directly, you're a pakpa. If you have not seen emptiness directly, you're an infant. You're a kid. You're like a crazy kid. And you're hurting yourself and you're hurting other people. Okay? You're constantly collecting bad karma. Tremendous bad karma. And you're constantly destroying thousands and thousands of years of good karma. It's just the nature of anyone who has not seen emptiness directly. Okay, that's Chiba. Why do we get into that? He's talking about that this is the way that people live who are Chiba. Okay? The mass of humanity is living a kind of life that is destroying their own happiness. So why are you so surprised when they go after you? You know, these are people who don't even know how to take care of themselves. These are people who are very effectively slaughtering their own happiness. So what's the big deal if they come after you? You know, why are you so surprised? He says, okay. That's depressing. Okay. And then at the end of this verse, he says, look, if you saw a bunch of kids playing with razor blades and cutting themselves up, and then they might try to cut you, what do you get angry at them for? You know, you should feel sorry. You should be crying. You know, when you look and you think about the mass of humanity engaged in futile activity, dying hopelessly and alone, and then doing the same to others, you should be sad. You should pity them. You should have compassion for them. What are you doing getting angry? What kind of bodhisattva are you? You know, he says you should, thinking about the way that the mankind is hurting itself and then hurting others, should make you sad and sweet in your heart. You should feel this sweet compassion for people. And instead you're getting angry. You know, what kind of person are you? Okay, that's his argument. Okay, go ahead, next one.
If people are harmful by nature, it is no surprise when they hurt us. If they are only harmful at moments, we should bear with them. Contemplation 10. If it is the very nature of those who are children to do harm to others, then being angry with them is wrong as hating fire for the fact it burns. And if the nature of living beings is to be thoughtful, then all their faults are occasional, and being angry with them is wrong too, wrong as hating a puff of smoke in the sky.
So it's another argument by Master Shantideva. He says, look, there's only two choices. Either people are really, their nature, the basic human nature, is bad, or the basic human nature is noble. Okay, there's only two choices. Either people are by very nature nasty, harmful, hurting, or they are good people. You know, the basic human nature is good. So in the first case, let's suppose the first case is true. Let's suppose it's human nature to be brutal and to be harmful and to harm other people. Then what are you surprised about? You know, I think you should get mad at fire. Why? Because it burns. It has a nasty nature. Ew. You know, you should go out and every time somebody lights a cigarette, you should go up and punch them in the face or something, you know, because they have fire and fire is bad. Why? Fire always burns you. No, you should be mad at fire. And then somebody says, he says, Shantideva says, go out and grab some fire. And when you get burned, then you should be yelling at fire. Oh, you burned me, you know. But people don't do it because why? I mean, after you burn yourself for the first time when you're a kid, you know that's the nature of fire. And you don't expect anything else. You know, you don't go up to every fire you ever see and say, I remember you burned me when I was 3 years old. You're really bad, you know. So if it's true that the nature of the human being is to be brutal, then what are you surprised about and why are you getting mad at them? This is their nature. You know, if they burn you, they're going to burn you. This is human nature. So don't be surprised and don't be upset. That's the way people are. That's their very nature. Okay. He's not saying it is, but he's saying if it were true. Okay. It is not the nature. Okay. Then he says, well, how about the other hand? On the other hand, suppose the real nature, the inner nature of human beings is to be kind and to be compassionate. And people just slip up from time to time. So why are you getting pissed off at people who just slip up from time to time? Okay? Look at their real nature. I mean, the real nature of a human being is compassion, love for other creatures. Human beings do very noble things. Okay, and from time to time they screw up. Are you going to get mad at them because from time to time they screw up? Their real nature is kindness. Do you get mad at the sky because a little cloud comes across the sky? He says, you don't get mad at the sky. You don't say, oh, you're always stinky sky, you always have clouds, you know. When it's just one small cloud that came across the sky. So if from time to time, a human being whose nature is noble, comes and does something bad to you, well, just excuse it, because that's not their real nature. And that's what mothers do, right? I mean, you watch TV. Rinpoche is always joking about it. This guy killed 5 people in Brooklyn yesterday in a drug thing, and they interviewed his mother today. And she said, yeah, maybe he did it, but he's a great boy, and he's a good boy. You know, he's always a good boy. He's a very nice boy. He's a good boy. He's my boy. He's a good boy. You know, and they say, yeah, but he killed 5 people. Well, he just slipped up, you know. And that's really what it is. You know, the mother has that attitude. The mother is aware that the true nature of the boy is noble. And okay, he messed up from time to time. So if people mess up from time to time, bear with them, if that's their nature. If their nature is to be totally evil and brutal, then why get upset? What do you expect? Why get upset when they hurt you? They're just expressing their true nature, okay? So Shantideva says, you can't get angry either way, sorry. You know, if their nature is brutal, you can't get angry. If their nature is noble, you can't get angry. Stop getting angry, okay? All right, next one.
Should we be angry at sticks? Contemplation 11. It's the stick or the like that acts directly. If you're angry at what impels it, then get mad if you really must at anger itself, since it's the force that drives the other one.
Okay. Now Master Shantideva is giving you another logic for not getting angry. He's giving you another proof for not getting angry. He says, suppose somebody comes up to you in the street. This happened to a friend of mine, Dan Kiley, right? And he was just walking down the street and some guy punched him. You know, some guy hit him with a stick. And that guy, wasn't it Pierre on 39th Street? He's just walking down the street and some guy took a 2x4 and hit him on the side of the head. You know, he's just walking down the street. This really happened to our friend. So who are you going to get mad at? Shantideva says, who are you going to get mad at? Let's decide who you're going to get mad at. I think you should get mad at the 2x4. You know, you should take that 2x4 and bang it, step on it, and say, stupid 2x4, you know? And then everybody says, well, that would be silly to get mad at the 2x4. And Master Shantideva says, why? And they say, well, it wasn't the 2x4 that hit me. I mean, the 2x4 did the direct damage. But if the guy hadn't picked it up and swung it, the 2x4 would have been sitting on the ground. And I would have walked by. And I never would have get hit by the 2x4. It's what impels the 2x4. It what sets the 2x4 in motion is what I should get mad at. And that's that guy. You know, that's that guy that was swinging the stick at me. You know, I should get mad at him. It's true that the stick did the damage. But it couldn't have done anything. It's powerless without this guy's motivation and this guy's desire to hit me. It's the guy I should get mad at. It's silly to get mad at a stick. You don't see people in the street jumping on sticks that hit them. You know, they're punching the guy who hit them with the stick. Why? Because they impelled the stick. They made the stick move. So Master Shantideva says, ha! You know, ha! You know, I got you now. You know. So the guy is the same. And then the guy says, what do you mean the guy is the same? The guy's not under control of himself. He's being moved by anger. He's being driven by his anger. He's being driven by his mental afflictions. You can't blame him. You have to blame the guy that's swinging the stick. And you have to blame the guy that's moving the guy. And that's anger. So if you want to get pissed off at anger. And you've got enough in your own mind that you can concentrate on, by the way. It's very cool. And it's true. It's perfectly logical. Don't get mad at the stick. You should get mad at the stick. Why? It's the thing that hit you. Yeah, but I shouldn't get mad at the stick. There's lots of 2x4s in New York that didn't hit me. You know, it's because this guy swung it. The 2x4 by himself is hopeless, helpless, can't do anything. It takes a guy to pick it up and move it. Well, then you should stop being mad at the guy. Why? He's being totally controlled by his anger, as much as the stick is being controlled by the guy. You can't blame the guy anymore. You have to fight what? Anger. And you don't even have to fight his anger because you've got plenty in your own mind. So you should go on a campaign against anger. And you should start with your own anger. Next time somebody hits you with a stick, you should go on a big campaign against anger. And you can start at home. You know, and that's his argument. Okay, I think we have one more.
Who is it that actually created the objects that brings us anger? Contemplation 12. I myself, in days gone by, perpetuated this very harm on other living beings, and so it's right that living beings should act in ways that harm and do wrong to me now. Their weapons and this body of mine, both of them provide the causes for the pain to come. They produce the weapon and I produce the body. At which should I be angry? This blister in the shape of a man, unbearable if someone touches it, filled with suffering, it's me who, driven by blind desire, grasps to it. So who deserves my anger when someone harms it? Children want no suffering, but at the same time, they thirst for the things that bring them pain. If suffering comes to you because of some fault of your own, why feel hate for others? Take, for example, the guards of hell and forests filled with trees with leaves made of blades of swords. Every one of them was created by the deeds you did yourself. Who then deserves your anger?
Okay, last argument, then we'll go home. Where did the world come from if it wasn't made by this big dude with a beard? We used to have Rick Fields. He looked just like God, right? That guy? If it didn't come from nowhere, and it didn't come from some guy, where did it come from? You know, it's very, very important to identify where did the things that make you angry come from. Okay, who made your boss? Who made your boss? And we've talked about it many times. Okay, if you haven't been in this class before, I'll go over it one more time. Okay, we say the boss is empty. We say that by himself, if you just very objectively look at it, the boss is just a bunch of colors and shapes. Okay? Today he's red, yesterday he was white. Yesterday his mouth was a line, and now his mouth is a circle. Yesterday there was no decibels coming out, now there are decibels coming out. Okay? But in and of itself, it's just decibels, and it's just shapes, and it's just colors, until you interpret it a certain way. Okay? Like when that boss comes in and starts making noise, if he was talking Albanian and screaming at you in Albanian, you'd be like, is he mad or not? If you've ever heard Vietnamese, if you heard a person speak Vietnamese in an excited way, you can't tell if they're mad or happy. You know? It's like, wah, 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 wah. You know? And so, I mean, if he were speaking some language you didn't know, if it was just noises, and if it was just colors, and just different shapes, you know, it'd be like watching just colors on a paint, you know, colors of paint, you know, just slopping paint on something. And you're not sure how to take it yet. And in fact, that's the way the world is. There is no more than that. There's just a bunch of shapes and colors. And high sounds and low sounds and loud sounds and soft sounds. Until something else happens, that's all there is. What is something else? Your mind interprets it a certain way. Your mind organizes it in a certain way. Your mind says, boss, loud, angry, yelling at me. You know, your mind chooses to interpret it in a certain way. In and of himself, he is only colors and shapes. You've got to get used to that. Okay? In and of, you can imagine it. You know, turn off your mind and open your eyes. It's not Roy anymore. It's just a bunch of blue and some brown and, you know. Okay, turn off your mind and look around again. You know, it's just colors, shapes, noises. It doesn't mean anything until something happens. What? Your mind interprets. Okay, your mind starts to organize. How does it organize? I like him. I don't like him. You know, he's yelling. He's not yelling. You know, she's pretty, she's not pretty. You know, like that. Your mind starts to make distinctions. They are not self-existent. They do not exist in those objects by themselves. Some of the music that you like, other people hate. Try it sometime. You know, the music that you think is the best music in the world, you turn it on to your friends and they're like, you know. Or you say, wait, I'm going to cook you this really good dinner. You know, I learned this in Thailand, you know. And you make it and they say, interesting, you know. You know, it means that that is not self-existent. The music is not self-existent. Your favorite song is not self-existent. Your favorite food is not self-existent. It's just a bunch of colors. It's just a bunch of shapes. It's just a bunch of sounds. It's just a bunch of tastes. Whether or not the mind chooses to call it delicious or not is up to each person's mind. Okay? They are not self-existent. Okay? Does that mean that next time Dr. Sykes comes to my house, I can give him a big plate of cow pie and tell him, listen, Dr. Sykes, it's all in your mind. You know, this is a circular brown thing. And cheesecake is a circular brown thing. And all you have to do, Dr. Sykes, is to think of it as cheesecake and take a big bite, you know. And, you know, can you do that? Does it work? It doesn't work. You know, what I'm trying to say is that it's true that the world is a result of your mind organizing it in a certain way, but it is not a matter of choice. Okay? It is not a matter of choice. Things are empty. Things don't have their own nature. And it's true that you do give them their nature, and you do impute their nature, and that your mind imputes it in a unique way to you. But it's not a matter of choice. We wish it was. We would be in a Buddha field right now. Okay? Something is being forced on you. You don't have a choice. You can even be aware that things are empty. You can even be aware that a cow pie could be a cheesecake. But you can't change it by decision. You can't change it by willpower. What does it take? You have to change your karma. Okay? Can you do that in 5 minutes? Absolutely not. Okay? That perception of that organization of those colors and shapes is being forced on you by your past karma. You ain't got no choice. You're gonna see it as a cow pie for now. Okay? And if a deity came in there, if a tantric deity walked in the room, the ambrosia of immortality, cheesecake. You know? Really, the same object, the same colors and shapes would be the most infinitely delicious thing. The Buddhas have this quality called rochognang. No matter what they eat, they could eat pure poop, it tastes like ambrosia to them. Okay, why? Because their mind is being forced by their past good deeds to organize it that way. What's that got to do with what we're talking about? Where did the guy come that pissed you off? Was it made by God? No. Okay, it's a bunch of colors and shapes and noises that your mind is interpreting as an evil person who's attacking you. Why? Because of your own past karma. And if you want to meet this guy again, and if you want to see him yell at you again, what's the best thing to do? Get angry. Okay? According to Buddhism, it's the only way to get him back in your room that way. You know, if you stop being angry, he might come in as a tantric deity next time. Seriously. Okay? So the worst thing you can do is to get angry. And Master Shantideva says, come on, wake up. The world wasn't created by God. And the world wasn't created by nothing. The world is created by your reactions to the world. Stop reacting negatively or else you're going to have a lousy... What'd you say on that t-shirt? Never mind. The world's going to suck, okay? The whole world, you know, is going to be like that. Stop collecting bad karma. Stop being angry. He says that. Last argument. I always keep saying last, right? This is really the last argument. Shantideva says, look, whose fault is it? Who put your body here? Okay? Who brought your body here? And this you have to understand the three realms, okay? Samsara, you know, suffering world of rebirth. It has three realms, form realm, formless realm, and desire realm. Okay? It says there's three realms. And you're in a place called the desire realm. And the nature of the desire realm is pure suffering. Okay? Once you get here, once you are here, you have to suffer. And you will be attacked by other people. And your body will get hurt and cut and sick. You don't have any choice. Okay? Once you park the body in the desire realm, you are stuck. And you will suffer by the nature of that body. This nature must suffer. This mind must suffer. Okay? And I tell you, the day that you see emptiness directly, you will see the three realms. You know, like up to now, it's like you're taking my word for it. Okay? On the day you see emptiness directly, you see directly, after you come out of the emptiness experience, you see directly that you really are in a thing called the desire realm. And it really is true that everything here must suffer. Okay? And it really is true that if you are in this realm with me, and if you are who you seem to be, which I don't know, you came here because you had some mental afflictions. You were thrown here by your bad karma. If you are here, it proves that you have bad karma. It's very interesting, okay? You cannot be in this realm with us here unless you are really doing some bad karma. And you will suffer. Once you're in this realm, which you were when your mom gave birth to you, you're going to suffer. Period. You must suffer. And this body will suffer. So why are you getting mad at other people for? Who parked you here? Who brought you here? You know, who set up all the nice causes for you to take birth here? You know, who gave you this body? This body must suffer. This mind must suffer if it's in the desire realm. If you park your body, if you stop and get off in the desire realm, you must suffer. So who are you going to blame? Why are you blaming other people? Get honest. Be honest with yourself. Who put you here? And not only that, you like it here. Okay, like Shantideva gets very heavy, you know, he says, not only that, you think it's nice here. There's this joke in Tibet, you know, two flies are sitting on a piece of shit. And one says to the other, I don't think I'd like it in a Buddha field. And the other says, well, why? You know, he says, I don't think they have any shit there, you know. It's a Tibetan joke, okay. Master Shantideva says, look, you park your body here. You invested in this body, and now you like it. And now you grab onto it, and you say, this is me, this is Michael Roach. I want this to be Michael Roach. This is going to be Michael Roach. You know, this is the best body. This is the best mind. I like samsara. I like desire realm, you know. I want to be the best in the desire realm. You know, I want everything the desire realm has to offer. Well, it's you who are getting attached to something that must suffer. You know, if you want to blame anybody, don't blame the guy who's hitting your body. Blame the guy who made your body. And blame the guy who's grasping onto this body and saying, oh, cool body, nice body, I really like this body. You know, blame that guy. Because that's the guy who's causing the trouble. Okay? Once you have a body like this, someone's going to hurt it. Once you have a mind like this, you're going to suffer. Okay? And not only were you so stupid to park it here, but you like it here. So what do you expect? Quit getting angry at people. Okay? You should get angry at who? That's yourself. You brought yourself here, and you keep yourself here. And it's bad. It's really, really bad. It's a serious situation. It's a very, very, how do you say? It's a matter of life and death. This is a terrible, terrible realm to be in. Deadly. Deadly and very painful. Nothing can happen in this realm except pain. And you put yourself here, and you're keeping yourself here, and you're not doing anything to get out of it, and you're kind of like going to Buddhism class and half-heartedly meditating in the morning. 15, oh, do I have to do 20 minutes, you know? He said I had to do 20 minutes, you know. It means you like it here. It means you really prefer it out in the world. You prefer the coffee shop to enlightenment. You know, you really do. Because you're always whining about the hour that you have to meditate. It's proof. It proves it. You like the desire realm. And it's going to burn you. You know, the nature of this body and the nature of this mind is to suffer. And if you don't get out of it while you have the strength and the chance, then stop getting angry. You know, you chose that. That's your choice. You know. So that's the last argument. Oh, this realm is a good realm to be in if you want to be a Buddhist because you can think clearly as opposed to a hell realm. They're in so much pain they can't have a clear thought in their whole life. And it's better than a higher realm because they have so much comfort that they don't want to get out. So we have this very nice situation where life starts nice and then it gets worse and worse. So somewhere in between, you should become a Buddhist and study and get out. Okay. There's one more question on your homework that I forgot, and then we'll quit. For those doing the Tibetan Trant, there are four important words in Tibetan for a changing thing, and I want you to know them. Okay?
Tibetan track people should know those four. Say Ngopo.
Ngopo. Ngopo, if you're a translator, if you're learning to be a translator, it can mean in general anything. But more specifically, it often, most often means anything that does something, a functional thing. Say Mitakpa. Mitakpa. Very often translated as impermanent, which is a mistake. Okay? The mind is Mitakpa, but it's not impermanent, it's permanent. Okay? Mitakpa means a changing thing. Alright? So Duchepa. Duchepa. This is a tricky one. Everybody mistranslates it. They say aggregated thing or composed thing, and they haven't understand the full meaning of the word. It's Gyu Dunkin Dune Chepe Chu, which means a thing which is produced by causes. A thing which is produced by the convening of causes. Okay? Produced by causes. Composed thing or aggregate thing is a mistake because empty space, for example, is a composed thing. It's composed of the four directions, and there's no way it's a changing thing. It's a mistranslation, very serious mistranslation. Okay? Say chepa. Chepa. Chepa means a produced thing, something that was made. Okay? What's the point of talking about these four? They are absolutely synonymous. Every one is totally equivalent to the others. They all mean exactly the same thing. There is no thing which is any one of them which is not the other three. If you are making anything, doing anything, performing any function, you are changing. You were caused, you were made. Okay? And that's very profound. Okay? That in itself disproves the idea of an eternal God. Okay? These four are synonyms. There's no thing which is one of them which is not the other three. They are totally kepanyamba, which means totally the same set of things. Okay, and you have to get used to that. You have to think about it. Anything that had a cause is changing. Anything that does anything is changing. Anything that does anything had a cause. Anything that doesn't do anything didn't have a cause. Anything that doesn't have a cause can't do anything. God can't do anything. Can't think anything, can't do anything. If it's unchanging. Or if it's not caused. If no one made him. And no one did make him because he made everything and he didn't have time to make himself in the meantime. Okay? And you got to get used to it. It's totally, it's tight. It's tight logic. You got to overcome your childhood. You can put it in the category of Santa Claus and stuff. You know, it takes time. But and I'm not being disrespectful. What I'm trying to say is, until you realize that you are creating all of these objects that make you angry, you're in deep trouble. Okay? You must realize and you must admit that you are creating them. You must realize and recognize that you are creating them. And therefore, it's totally insane to be angry at them. Because you're just creating more every moment you're angry. You know? And this is the real path to freedom. This is the real way to get out of samsara, to get out of suffering. You must admit and understand that the person who made it is you. And the last thing you want to do is create more. You have to stop. Okay? That's cessation. All right? Okay, we'll do a short prayer. And sorry to keep you late, but I always do that. Okay.
Sāshē bhagyē chōngshēk mē tōtāṁ Rē rāv lēngshē nēndē gāmbāntī Sāngyē shīngdō mēngtē ālwāgī Tōgē nāmdā shīnglā shībāngshō Pidam Guru Ratnamendala Kandiya Dayami Gyawadi Gyawokun Sanam Yeshe Tsokzokshin Sanam Yeshe Lechungwe Dambagunye Dupan Shou